Good afternoon. My name is Ann Cavall, and on behalf of the Breast Cancer Education Association Board and Volunteers, I welcome you to the BCEA webinar education series. I encourage you to grab a pen and paper, as there will be plenty of good information shared in the next hour. Today, we have participants joining us in two ways, via webcast or by phone. For those connected via webcast, please follow along with the slideshow on your screen. 2018 is, again, a year that the BCEA continues to expand our mission of providing breast cancer educational resources. This year's educational programming continues to encourage, engage, and empower those affected by breast cancer in a variety of ways, including webinars such as this one offered throughout the year, our signature education conference, which is scheduled for October 6, 2018, at the TIES Conference Center in St. Paul, Minnesota. This conference will deliver the most up-to-date information on breast cancer treatments and nutrition, a mobile mammography unit on-site, and many roundtable discussions that connect attendees on the most pressing breast health topics. Conference will also highlight heart health with Dr. Ann Blaze speaking on cardio-oncology. Please mark your calendar for October 6th, and we hope to see you there. Please also tap into the ongoing resources on our website and social media channels available 24/7. If you were unable to attend any of our previous webinars, including the first part, if you are unable to attend any of our previous webinars, this is a great way to access valuable information at your convenience. We also invite you to join us for a little fun and participate in one of our upcoming partner fundraisers. The first is the Breast Dinner Ever at Jones in the Park in St. Paul. It's on June 7th and features a four-course dinner at one of the best restaurants in the Twin Cities. Another opportunity is the Shulock Breastfest Music Festival on September 15th in Corcoran. This is a really great opportunity to have fun, hear great music, and support a good cause. You can find more information on both events at our website at www.breastcancereducation.org. The BCEA also welcomes your involvement in our organization. We welcome participation on all levels and have many different types of volunteer opportunities available, whether it's just for an hour a year or a couple hours a month. We have exciting plans this year and hope that you can help us deliver education and empowerment to those fighting breast cancer. If you have not done so yet, please be sure to connect with us on social media. We regularly share and foster discussion on the latest news and resources in breast cancer detection, diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. We also encourage you to share what you learned today using hashtag BCEAWebinar. Please also keep your eye out for more information on our other upcoming webinars. Many more are planned this year, and we will share specific information on these sessions as soon as complete details are available. And now I'd like to introduce the speaker for today's webinar. Dr. Louis Pagan Carlo is a cardiologist in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and is affiliated with the Minneapolis Heart Institute at Abbott Northwestern Hospital. He received his medical degree from Temple University School of Medicine and has been in practice for more than 20 years. Welcome, Dr. Pagan Carlo.
Thank you, Anne. I'd like to start by thanking the BCEA organizers for inviting me to give this lecture. And in this slide, we're basically I'm showing what the outline of the talk will be. So the issues are why heart disease awareness is in women matters. We'll discuss some of the symptoms of heart disease and risk factors for heart disease. Basically, since 1979, there's been a drop in deaths in the U.S. due to heart disease, as shown by this slide. The interesting point of this slide is that both men and women have tracked fairly well since the data has been kept. And still in 2014, there were over 400,000 deaths ascribed to heart disease, both women and men. And clearly, it's been known in the scientific literature and in the medical literature that heart disease is the number one killer of both men and women. Here we see mortality on the y-axis and causes of death in the x-axis. And in the left of the slide in blue, you see the male causes of death, and on the right, you see the female causes of death. And both in both cases, A stands for heart disease, and you see that clearly since data has been monitored, heart disease is still the number one cause of death in women. This is so followed by cancers, and that includes all multiple cancers, and then there's addition of a smattering of other causes such as accidents, lung disease, diabetes, and Alzheimer's. So the scope of the problem is not small. Cardiovascular disease is by far the greatest killer of women. One in four women die from coronary vascular disease or cardiovascular disease. One woman dies nearly every 80 seconds from heart disease or stroke, or better yet, from an atherosclerotic process. Women are often 10 years older and sicker than men when they present with their events. But it is not exclusive to older women. Younger women can actually have the problem, too. We know clearly that annually approximately 35,000 women die from cardiovascular disease in the U.S., as shown in this slide. It is still primarily a problem of older women, but it is not insignificant that 35,000 younger women die of this process. And young women that have coronary artery disease tend to have a worse prognosis than men. So clearly awareness is still lacking. Women often wait prior to being evaluated. Women are often 52% more likely to experience a meaningful delay in emergency care. And surveys do demonstrate that only 65% of women would dial 911 with symptoms of a heart attack. There's been some advancement. Between 1997 and 2012, awareness has improved from 30% to 56%. So that still means 44% of women are unaware that heart disease is the number one killer of women. In minorities, we are lacking awareness far greater, as shown in this slide. Blacks and Hispanics, women are only 35% aware, or better yet, 35% of Black and Hispanic women are aware that heart disease is the number one killer in women. Interestingly, the common symptoms that we associate with heart disease in men are often lacking in women. In women, jaw pain, shortness of breath, backache, extreme fatigue or nausea are the most common presenting signs, as I will show later in this presentation. There has been some studies that back this finding up. 64% of women who die suddenly of coronary heart disease show absolutely no prior symptoms. And nearly half of all heart attacks among women, most of the typical male symptoms are not present. So what are the common symptoms? We all know about the chest pain or chest discomfort or feeling like you have a ton of weight on your chest. In women particularly, there's an unusual upper body discomfort that's nondescript and you can't point to a location. It's just an overall ache or discomfort. There is shortness of breath, which is strongly associated with heart disease. There's breaking out into a cold sweat for no clear reason, and this means a profound drenching sweat. Patients can complain of lightheadedness or sudden dizziness. Nausea is often a presenting sign for some patients. And in women particularly, fatigue is a worrisome sign. This is a study that I mentioned earlier, and this is a study done in 2003 only of women. And basically, in 43% of all women presenting with heart attacks, chest pain was not present. The most common symptoms were dyspnea, which is seen in 58%, weakness seen in 55%, and fatigue seen in 43% of the patients, period. The prodrome, or symptoms before the heart attack, fatigue was the most common one, seen in 71% of patients. Sleep disturbance was 48% present, and shortness of breath. Interesting, sleep disturbance as a new presentation, more than a chronic problem. So what are the risk factors for heart disease in women? The traditional factors that apply both to men and women, but since this is a talk regarding given by the Breast Cancer Association, this will be primarily aimed for the female population. In case of in terms of women, age over 55 is a risk factor. Dyslipidemia, which basically means a high LDL or high bad cholesterol and a low HDL or a low good cholesterol. A premature history of family disease, which means a first-degree male presenting with a heart attack or a stroke before the age of 55, or a first-degree female relative presenting with a heart attack or a stroke before the age of 65.
And
diabetes.
I'm sorry for interrupting. When you say first-degree, are you talking mother or father or brother or sister, or what does that exactly mean, the first degree?
Mother, father, or siblings.
Thank you.
Diabetes is obviously a risk factor that's well known. Smoking, hypertension, peripheral arterial disease, and strokes that we sometimes call CVAs. The risk factors that are specific to women are menopause or perimenopausal period, obesity, the metabolic syndrome, which basically is a syndrome of several characteristics, which include central adiposity or having a body shaped like an apple as opposed to a pear, hypertension, a low HDL or a low good cholesterol, high triglycerides, which is another component of the cholesterol profile, and insulin resistance. More common in women is actually autoimmune disease and chronic inflammation. Exposure to cardiotoxic care, chemotherapeutic treatment. Specifically, I am speaking either of chemotherapy and or radiation. It is well established that chemotherapeutic agents affect high blood pressure, affect hyperlipidemia, and can secondarily be causative to atherosclerosis, particularly when it comes to radiation. When it comes to some of the chemotherapeutic effects or the chemotherapeutic compounds effects on heart, and the ones that are mostly known of are the anthracycline analogs, such as doxorubicin, these tend to cause myocardial dysfunction, cardiomyopathies, heart failure, which are in the spectrum of heart disease, but they're not myocardial infarctions or heart attacks. All of these effects appear to be specifically with the chemotherapeutic effects with the chemotherapeutic agents appear to be dose related. Now, that's as much as I will talk about chemotherapy. As it was just mentioned, there will be a talk on this at the October session. Women tend to have relatively high testosterone levels prior to menopause. That in itself could be a risk factor specific to women. Increasing blood pressure during menopause is a risk factor for women. And in case of women, lack of risk factor awareness of lack of recognition of many of the symptoms and risk factors is considered a risk factor in and of itself.
So I actually have two questions from
okay.
From folks about the risk factors. So one of them is a medical professional, and the question was, how do we frame the conversation so women have a more accurate understanding of the risk of heart disease as compared with breast cancer? And in the comment from this person who's asking the question said that in her years as with a breast program, women were terrified of breast cancer and not necessarily for heart disease, which is such a bigger threat. So can you speak to that question?
Yes, so I think education programs like this obviously are key. I think there's been a concerted effort by both the oncology community and the cardiovascular community to address the concern of the cardiovascular disease. However, I think that it is harder to convince someone who's lost a mother, a grandmother, an aunt, and maybe a sister to breast cancer to be more focused on coronary disease than breast cancer. So I think it has to do with the onset of knowledge of the disease and how traumatized you were by it. I think in 15, 20 years, it'll be a different story because this same kind of conversation will have been had many more times, not only in conferences, but between family doctors and their patients and doctors that are dealing with the cancers and their patients.
Excellent. So the second question is, so the risk factors for cancer and heart disease seem similar. Can you compare and contrast or comment on that?
Well, it's interesting. The basis of most of this is now known to be an inflammatory process, and that is a catch-all a phrase for many things. But as I mentioned in the slide here, autoimmune disease and chronic inflammation are at the basis of most of these diseases. Interestingly, cancers and coronary disease share several lifestyle things that can be altered. For example, they both share excess calories. They both share people tend to eat lots of fat. There's an inadequate fiber intake. They tend to have high salt diets, and there tends to be excess alcohol and inadequate exercise. So that's the common theme. And all of these issues that I just mentioned tend to be feeders into a more aggressive inflammatory response to any effect in the body. Now, having said that, you can mitigate risk factors and you can try to eat healthier and lead a healthier lifestyle, but there are certain things that you cannot control, and I will speak to this a little bit later. So genes are not controllable, your family history is not controllable, and bad luck is not controllable. Heart disease is probably a little more controllable than cancer because heart disease has a heavy component of lifestyle. To control a genetic pool or a bad luck event that would then cause the mutation that triggers on the cancer is a little bit harder. Having said that, I do think that a lot of diseases nowadays that are based on the inflammatory response, such as diabetes, obesity, and all the consequences of that, can be controlled and mitigated to our benefit and long term.
Thank you. Appreciate that. The answers to both of those questions and the clarification.
Thank you. So other risk factors that apply to women actually show up early in women's lives, including eclampsia or preeclampsia, which are normally seen during pregnancy, or gestational diabetes. Interestingly, it is now known that preeclampsia results in 3.8 times more likely of developing a woman presenting with preeclampsia developing diabetes, and almost a 12 times higher likelihood of developing hypertension requiring treatment. Gestational diabetes actually increases the risk of developing diabetes in a woman 70% times greater than otherwise would be the case. Depression and stress are more common in women, and they tend to be risk factors for coronary disease. Sleep apnea and poor sleep, obviously well known. It's an area of expansive research currently. It's unclear whether sleep has to do with triggering inflammation or triggering bad habits, but it's an area that's fertile, and clearly people that tend to sleep more and take better care of their nighttime behaviors tend to do better long term. And obviously diet and exercise, which we have talked about. So there are some risk factors that are far more predictive in women than men. Diabetes almost doubles the risk of a fatal coronary artery event. Smoking is associated with 50% of all coronary events in women, and that's not the case in men. Smoking also elevates the risk in women, even with minimal use of tobacco products. Women who smoke have six-fold increased risk of MI versus three times in men. And smoking conveys a risk higher for women than in men, regardless of age. One of the things that have changed recently is how we are starting to think of menopause in relations to heart disease and women. The traditional paradigm was that women before menopause had minimal to no risk of coronary disease or atherosclerosis, period. And then menopause ensued, and all of a sudden there was a rapid increasing risk of a cardiovascular event. The way we are now thinking, as called the alternative paradigm, is that it's a lifelong process of increasing risk for coronary vascular disease. And the onset of menopause may accelerate these, but the problem is that onset of menopause may be variable. And it may be variable because if you have, if you smoke early in life, that may preset your ovaries that are highly vascular organs to go into menopause much earlier than they otherwise would have. That accelerates your risk of coronary artery disease as well as stroke. So the behaviors may be driving the onset of menopause, which then increases your risk of coronary artery disease. And this has been a paradigm shift in the way we're all thinking and how we're all addressing these issues with women. In this slide, what I'm trying to show is what happens throughout life in an artery. On the left of the slide, you see a normal artery. The vessel walls, which are those little yellow lines at the top, are essentially normal. As you get older, the vessel wall gets thicker, fills with fat and cholesterol. Ultimately, that deposition of fat and cholesterol will have an effect that may be the cause of the heart attack. So clearly, being premenopausal does not protect you from cardiovascular disease, and you should be vigilant all ages. Obviously, age and heredity do have a big role to play. But you can control blood pressure, smoking, your cholesterol, your risk of diabetes, and your level of activity and your weight, period. So in order to modify heart disease, and as I mentioned earlier, it is estimated that 80% of all heart disease is preventable, or in other words, 6 out of 10 deaths of heart disease before the age of age 65 could be prevented. It basically entails controlling your modifiable risk factors. So the major risk factors, we've all heard them before, are age, gender, family history. These are non-modifiable factors. You can't do anything about your family, your sex, or your family history. But some of the other major risk factors are high blood pressure, high blood cholesterol, physical inactivity, obesity, overweight, smoking, diabetes, and poor diet. All of these are modifiable. And if you're able to control this, you will diminish the risk of early onset coronary artery disease. One thing that we have also noticed recently is that in recent studies, we started noticing that people that were having heart attacks had lower LDLs than we would have expected. Yet when we started calculating their coronary risk or risk of having a coronary event in the next 5 to 10 years, we realized that even a relatively low LDL would not prevent a cardiac event. And yet, if you're able to calculate your risk and your risk is high, treatment ensues, you might be able to delay the onset of the event. So clearly, cholesterol alone is not the way to do it. We now know that estimating your coronary risk or your risk of developing atherosclerosis in the next 10 years is a great marker and a much more useful tool than just the cholesterol levels. So what to do? The best thing you can do is obviously risk factor reduction. You need to be aware as a woman of what the symptoms are and be aware that your family history counts. So if you've had parents or siblings or close relatives with heart disease, and you develop some symptoms, you need to go see your doctor. You need to know your numbers, your cholesterol risk score, as well as your blood pressure. You need to stop smoking. As I mentioned earlier, smoking conveys a much higher risk in women than men. You need to get active. You need to start eating healthy. You need to maintain a healthy weight, which means a BMI less than 25, or some people guesstimate it as a waist circumference less than 35 inches. You need to treat your depression, avoid stress, and get enough sleep. Finally, I'd like to thank Dr. Rita Saxena for lending me her slides for this talk. Thank you.
Well, thank you. So I do have one last question that I'd love to pose to you. And you talked about prevention, and so prevention for both heart disease and breast cancer seems to be similar. Are there any overarching framework for prevention and healthy lifestyles besides what you have mentioned?
No, I mean, I think knowledge is obviously power, and healthy by knowledge, I mean healthy lifestyles. There's a great deal of literature published on the benefits of exercise, diet, and maintaining all your numbers within reasonable ranges. However, you know, there are things, as I mentioned, you're not going to be able to control and you need to be aware of. So in spite of doing everything right, if you develop symptoms of a heart attack or symptoms of a stroke, you need to pay attention and go see someone, certainly inform someone that you're not feeling well or call 911. You cannot avoid ultimately what your gene pool may predict for you long term.
Well, gracious thanks to our speaker, Dr. Luis Pagan-Carlo, and to you for joining us today. Again, please share what you learned today via our social media channels, and please think about coming to our conference on Saturday, October 6th at the TIES Conference Center in St. Paul. Thank you very much.